This is the voice of Carnage, and you are listening to Carnage Cast.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 8 of Carnage Cast. We've got a double header for you as Interview with the Gamer visits Triple Play in West Lebanon, New Hampshire, where we talk with Sean Wolfe and Tony Vandenberg about the tabletop gaming scene there. Autopsy of a Game gets under the skin of Arkham Horror with Dan, one of the players from our ongoing actual play recording. Dan is, unsurprisingly, a fan of the game.
Now, Interview with the Gamer.
Hi, I'm here with Sean Wolfe, co-owner of Triple Play, West Lebanon's game and comic book store. Hi, Sean, how are you today?
Doing good, thank you.
So, Triple Play is West Lebanon's game store. How long have you been here?
We've been here about 4 years, and I've owned the store almost 9 now.
And what got you into this business?
I love to play games. It's better than I wanted to have a place to play games, and no one else was doing it, so I decided I would.
And you have a lot of in-store gaming here?
We try to, yeah. We have games almost every night of the week.
What sort of games are people playing here?
Well, on Wednesdays we have board games, Thursdays is Magic, Tuesdays is role-playing, Fridays is Magic, Saturdays and Sunday are board games, 40K, Fantasy, role-playing, War Machine, Hordes, you name it, it's seen a table in here.
What was it like building the game community when you started here?
Well, I bought the store off the old owner, so there was already an existing Magic community, and then I started bringing in more of the board games, more of the miniatures, and it was very easy. People just appeared out of the woodworks. There were a lot of people in the Upper Valley who were looking for a place to play, and they showed up, so it was very easy.
So it's sort of became by itself a destination for people in the hobby.
Correct. We always say the store succeeded despite ourselves, meaning we don't do much marketing, much promotion, and just people out of the goodness of their hearts show up.
Cool. Today in particular, what's happening?
We're doing Ameritrash. We do it the first Sunday of every month. People come by and play board games that are usually by American designers, and a lot of luck, a lot of randomness, and games that usually take a lot longer.
What are you looking to play today?
Game of Thrones. Second edition just came out recently, and I love the game, and I'm really excited to try the new edition.
Any particular favorite house?
I like Stark. Their crest is a wolf, so you can't beat that.
It's a natural fit. Sean, good luck playing House Stark. Thank you for talking with us.
Great, thanks. Come on by and visit us.
Oh, actually, if people want to know more about Triple Play, where should they look online and where can they find you in the real world?
We are in West Lebanon on 12A. We're down by the new grocery store, whatever it's called, TriplePlayNH.com. Everything's online that you need.
Awesome. Thank you. Hi, I'm here with Tony Vandenberg, one of the staff at Triple Play in West Lebanon. Tony, how are you?
Excellent.
What role do you play here at Triple Play?
One of two employees who work here during the week, part-time. I also run a lot of events in my free time. I'm down here almost every weekend running a tournament of some kind. I admin on the forums, try to keep things under control, run the Facebook group, and post updates on what's going on here at the store.
So you're sort of the leader of the game-playing community here?
Somewhat, yeah, I could say that. As far as like a lot of the miniatures games, Warhammer 40K and War Machine, I definitely run the tournaments there, try to be representative of the gaming community. You know, we also have like board game nights. A lot of the Carnage guys like Rod and Chuck are very influential on that as well. Try to keep things wrangled. If someone who's not me wants to run a tournament, they tend to come to me so I can get everything scheduled and try to keep things orderly so we don't run into each other too much.
What goes into setting up a tournament?
A lot of it is trying to first find out a day to do it. We have a pretty good community here with a lot of free time, so generally Saturdays are the best day. I sit down and pick scenarios, like for War Machine and Warhammer. You have to figure out a scenario to do the rounds. So I usually go online, kind of figure out what people have used before in major tournaments, or try to come up with custom scenarios, which can be a lot of fun too. And then it's just trying to promote the thing, give enough advance notice so that we have people to come down and play, and then when everyone shows up, you know, we always have sales that day as well. That's an idea I came up with where if you purchase products of the tournament you're playing in, it's discounted. So it's another way to get people in here, hopefully, to participate.
Are there any especially popular games for tournaments or formats of tournaments?
Yeah, Magic has been taking off recently, and we've been doing Friday Night Magic for a while, run by Jeremy DeVoid. And It was always like, you know, maybe six people would show up, but it's been taken off recently, so we're actually starting to do Magic once per month. We're doing Magic tournaments on the weekends. The first one we had eight people show up, and that was with a week's advance notice, so I imagine the next one will be even bigger. Our War Machine community is huge. We have people from the surrounding areas come down. There's a group from Plymouth, a university that comes over about for our monthly War Machine tournaments, and the guys from Quarterstaff have kind of an away team that they go out to spread the hobby, because those guys have been playing since it was invented, and they've been coming down too. Our last War Machine tournament, we had 16 people in the store, which, looking around, you can tell we don't have a lot of room, so packing eight tables out here was pretty intense. It was a lot of fun. War Machine's been picking up big time. Yep.
There's a growing amount of travel between stores and groups in the area and region.
Yeah, we've the past year we've tried to kind of bridge the gap between the stores. Our 40K players have for a long time been going down to Game Castle. We haven't gotten a lot of their people to come up for 40K tournaments, but we try to go around and even if it's just me going up to Quarterstaff for a War Machine tournament, we try to spread it around and keep close ties between the stores, because it's a community, and even though we're in competition with each other, we're like 2 hours away from each other, so we might as well all play together.
Right, you're just far away enough to be comfortable.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So if people want to know more about Triple Play and what's going on in the store, what's the best place they should go?
You can go to www.tripleplaynh.com. We have all of our monthly events posted on the main site, and there's also a link to our forums on the main site where you can find more information about all the events. On the forums, there's a announcement at the top of every single forum that'll link you to our Facebook group, and that's another way to keep in touch. I'll be posting all of our events on all three of those media, so that's a good place to start.
Great, Tony. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Next, we take you to an autopsy of a game.
Hi, Dan. How are you today?
Hello, Tyler. I'm doing pretty well.
Welcome to Autopsy of a Game. You're here for your insightful commentary on Arkham Horror.
All right.
I think anyone who's met Dan would already know you're an Arkham Horror fan, but...
I do like Arkham Horror.
For the uninitiated, tell us a little bit about the game.
Well, Arkham Horror is it's a board game based on H.P. Lovecraft's stories. The central concept is you move around a board. You've got an investigator who has certain attributes, certain inventory items. You'll have like a gun, maybe, or a ancient book.
Uh-huh.
You move around the board. This departs a little bit from Lovecraft at this point. You fight a bunch of monsters, which Lovecraft's characters didn't really do very often.
Right.
Occasionally they did. Randolph Carter used to get into some fights in the Dreamlands and things like that, but mostly they run away from monsters.
Right, so this is more a game inspired by Lovecraft.
Yeah, there's a little more pulp action in this, since you actually have to beat the monsters to death. And then you go through gates to other worlds, which also is a bit of a departure, but a little less so, maybe. Do something in the other world, and you have some sort of experiences there that are often pretty rotten. Come back if you survived and close the gate. You need to do this before the Ancient One, who is Cthulhu or Nyarlathotep or Shub-Niggurath, something like that, wakes up, and you have to then fight them, and that's just terrible.
Yeah, it's not only a pain, it rarely goes well.
Yeah, it takes a long time, and then you lose. I mean, you can win. I have beat the Ancient One, but it takes a long time, and usually you don't, so...
Why bother?
Yeah, but we often just call it if they wake.
It's true. But the key of the game is that everybody has this character who is some sort of vaguely Lovecraftian or pulpish investigating type.
Yes.
Or with a motivation to investigate, who are running around the town of Arkham, visiting all the locations there. Like, you can join the local occult society or check out the science building at the Miskatonic U. And not only have encounters there, but occasionally jump or fall into interdimensional gates and explore other worlds.
Yep. And it's a cooperative game.
It is a cooperative game.
Worth remembering. I mean, you're playing against the rules, which are a harsh opponent.
They're very unforgiving.
But you come back from as I said, you seal the gates up.
Hopefully.
You can have, you can find things, you can have accidents, you can meet people who will help you out.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, you're basically gathering resources, using the resources to kill monsters and survive encounters, close gates. But it's really fun, I think. I mean, that's a pretty basic sort of thing. Gather stuff on the board, use the stuff to win the game. The thing I like the most about Arkham Horror is, A, there are a lot of bits.
Yep.
Which is kind of fun. It can get a little overwhelming, but there are a lot of bits. And the flavor text on the cards, I like it. It's fun reading the encounter to somebody.
That's what makes the game, is what's going to happen to me when I go into this place.
Yeah, some of them are quite Lovecrafty. Some of them are more pulpy, but they're always a good time.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a gate and a monster appear.
That's kind of boring, but it does help you towards winning the game since you couldn't possibly seal the gate.
Right.
It is not that interesting, though. I will give it that. You don't have much fun. You're just like, oh, I go through gate after all. Okay.
Yeah, but hopefully you've gone somewhere interesting.
Yes, because you'll still get to go to the Dreamlands or to
Unknown Kadath.
Yeah, the Plateau of Leng. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. All fine places to visit and hopefully escape from.
Of course, Arkham Horror also has a large number, well, a reasonably large number now of expansions. There are, I think, 7.
At least, possibly 8. If you count the new Dark Pharaoh.
That's right. They revised the Dark Pharaoh since the original, which is the first expansion, was pretty terrible.
They hadn't really gotten their game down yet.
No. They got the main game down, but...
Well, that's actually a funny thing about Arkham Horror is the main game by itself is so different from once you start adding expansions.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can actually win the main game without a lot of difficulty.
Yeah, it's easier. I mean, I find it's more fun to add an expansion or two because, well, 3 of them have additional boards, so there's somewhere new to go.
Yep.
Each of them has a new mechanic associated with the board. In Dunwich, there's the Dunwich Horror. In Kingsport, there's this Rift thing. Kingsport's not that great. In Innsmouth, there's the whole central bit of from the story of the Innsmouth Horror. The Deep Ones are getting ready to rise up, and the Feds are getting ready to raid.
Yep.
And you can trigger the Feds to come in and raid the place, which is kind of nice. Innsmouth also... Actually, Innsmouth is pretty hard.
It is. It's very hard.
Once the Ancient One has gotten enough Doom Tokens, when he fills up on his Doom Tokens, that's when he wakes up.
Right.
Once he's gotten halfway there, up in Innsmouth, suddenly the cops are on your tail all the time.
Yep. And, yeah, it makes moving around Innsmouth a lot harder.
Getting arrested in Innsmouth is terrible.
It is. If you're not savaged in the cell, you're probably going to be eaten by something.
Yeah. There's a few encounters let you escape, but a lot of them either let you get beat up or fed to a Shoggoth.
Yeah. I do have to take issue, though, with Kingsport being boring. I know this has been a common comment a lot of people have for it, but I do like that they incur the whole intent of the board is to get you to be in Kingsport having encounters.
And they do that very well.
Which is the absolute highlight of the game for me. I'm happy to send my investigator up there for a while to
That's true.
Hang around, hoover up coup tokens, and hopefully avoid the few monsters that find their way there.
Almost never.
Yeah, there are a couple of cards.
Encounters that'll pop a monster out.
And that's about it.
That's true. It's generally Kingsport is very safe. All of the encounter areas are green instead of red, which obviously they're safer if they're green. There's no clue tokens that appear. Occasionally,
very infrequently.
But yeah, you're not going to get generally.
I mean, the encounters
hung out
can
to
still
dry.
The encounters can still hang you out to dry
a bit, but they're not as bad.
No.
You can, if you want, force your way up to the Strange High House in the Mist, if you want to spend, you know, half the game doing that.
For no reward.
Yeah, well, you might get William Bane as a pal.
You might. That's the key point. You could spend your whole... If you did nothing but run up to the Strange High House, that means you get up there with nothing to buy any of the options that are available up there.
Yeah, you need to be pretty successful before you go up.
So it's almost like it's setting you up to get the stuff you need, run up to the High House just as the game is ending. So you spent the last 6 turns doing nothing but try to get to the Strange High House.
Get changed, meet William Bane, and leave.
Really, the best way to get up there is to be completely randomly and magically teleported by some other car.
There are a couple that do that.
Which has happened to me, and it's quite enjoyable.
It works great, because it happened to me once, and I actually got William Bane as an ally, and he's a pretty good ally.
He is.
And I didn't have to go through the incredible slog of getting there.
Well, then you have to walk back down, though, which is horrible.
Yes, yeah, it's still annoying. But at least you got your reward. The what else is great about Arkham Horror? It's a lengthy game. It can take a very long time.
Can and does.
It doesn't always, but it can take a good 6 hours.
It's at least a minimum 3-hour game.
Yeah, and I think that's great because It doesn't really encourage role-playing specifically, but you can kind of do a little in your head while you're playing it, and it does build a bit of a story.
Yeah, you can build a narrative out of all
these. Often games. Somebody who gets completely screwed over and over again by the encounters, and there's you know,
you can build somebody, rivalries with the other players, even though it's cooperative, and maybe like, well, you're killing more monsters than me, what the hell?
Somebody can become the deputy of Arkham, so now they're the cop, and they're, you know, driving their little cop car around.
There was
a paddy wagon.
There was a great game I played once where somebody became sheriff with the paddy wagon, and he and his ally Earl, just his ally Earl Sawyer,
deputy of Arkham,
spent the whole game careening around town, trying to shoot things, failing miserably, and then careening away.
Did he ever lose the paddy wagon?
I don't recall. I don't think he so much lost it as just completely failed to be a good keeper of the peace.
Well, these things happen. Not all cops are not all the police are cut out for policing.
No, not at all.
That's another thing that's interesting in Arkham Horror is I'm sure a lot of other games do this, but as you kill monsters and seal gates, you can then spend those and get some different resources. And you can become the sheriff or buy blessings or get the white ship and start sailing around.
I would love to get the white ship someday.
The white ship's pretty good. Not the greatest thing in the world, but it's very effective.
No. But it almost adds to that idea that Kingsport is a time sink.
Yeah.
Intended to distract you
it
from
is a little bit.
Saving the world.
Kingsport has a very... It's like the stories they picked for when they were... The inspirations they were picking when they designed Kingsport were very much his dream cycle stuff, his... Everything has sort of a liminal... sort of otherworldly quality up there.
Right, which is the whole goal, really. It's a different place than Arkham.
It does evoke the dream cycle better than any of the other parts. Although some of the monsters from the dream cycle appear in the regular game, and the Dreamlands is, of course, somewhere you can go.
Yep.
But
it's something that's confused me a little bit, because I'm not as familiar with the dream cycle stories as I am.
I really like them.
The general archetypes of Lovecraft, which I'm sort of crossed over and bled through into so much other game-related material that everybody knows Yahya Fatagan.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows that by now. It's amazing. For a guy who was really not a well-known writer who has some glaring problems with some of the things he writes, he really was awfully good at imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his stories are kind of stupid, but they still have excellent imagery.
Yeah. Some people call it purple for the way he gets so into Cyclopean tunes.
Yeah, he can dump into the purple prose a little bit, but I mean, not always.
He wears it like a paint bucket sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
But when he's talking about Cyclopean tombs and blasphemous tomes, he triggered something in a lot of people, I think.
I believe blasphemous is actually his most frequently used adjective.
You're right. Someone did a study and blasphemous came up the most.
That was probably S.T. Joshi. That guy knows everything there is to know about Lovecraft.
I've heard some people argue about that.
Yeah.
He's a little biased. I'm not certain how, so.
I haven't heard that.
He's got a new book out.
He's always got a new book out. I did not know there was that much money in Lovecraft and scholarship, but.
I think it's a niche market you have to be prepared to corner very thoroughly to make it
lucrative. Yes, I don't necessarily know that Joshi makes any money, but somebody's publishing his books.
Chaosium, for the most part.
Really? Yeah. That makes sense.
Chaosium is the holder of the Call of Cthulhu license.
Yeah, they've pretty much got license to do everything with anything Lovecraft ever did except the stories. And they can publish those because they're all public domain now.
I thought about half his material was public domain.
Oh, maybe it's only half.
And then the other half was either not yet out or Derleth and Arkham House had done certain things.
Maybe. Arkham House just closed for a bit, but they reopened.
But anyways, back to the game. One thing that you mentioned earlier I wanted to come back to was how the differences between Arkham Horror the game and Arkham the town in Lovecraft's stories and Lovecraft's stories overall in their tone and themes, I guess.
Well, the tone of some of the game and the stories, and sometimes it's the same, which is that it's hopeless.
Yeah.
The game can be pretty hard to win. But in the stories, there's not a whole lot of, well, there's a Gug here. Let's get out the pistols and shoot him to death.
And we know precisely how hard this Gug is going to be to kill, what its strengths are.
Generally tends to be that if somebody sees a monster, they're going to have a severe shock to their mental state, And then they're probably going to either run away or die.
In the stories.
In the stories, yes. Now, not all the time. In the Dream Cycle stuff, the monsters are way less horrifying. I mean, Night Gaunts, who appear in the stories with Nodens, they're a little creepy, but nobody seems too worried about them. Randolph Carter gets rides with them in the Dreamlands. Now, Randolph Carter is a pretty amazing guy.
He spends a lot of time with ghouls as well.
Yes, he's friends with the ghouls. He's friends to the cats. He's even friends to the Zoogs, even though he sells them out.
Really, he's a friend of convenience.
Yeah, he's got a goal, and he's going to pursue it, and he's not worried about other people. But the thing with the Dream Stories is there are still horrible monsters, Gugs and Dolls and some other tough, nasty stuff. But since it's a dream, people don't seem to be as worried. Whereas the non-Dreamland stuff, if someone runs into a monster, I'm trying to think of a good example of one right now. In Pikmin's model, the guy realizes that Pikmin is drawing stuff from life.
Right.
Because I think he sees a ghoul. In Arkham Horror, if you run into a ghoul, you're not worried. You don't even really need a weapon. You can probably just punch it to death.
Right.
But in the story, Pikmin's friend kind of goes a little crazy when he realizes this, and he flees the scene entirely. In the picture in the house, an old man proves to be a cannibal, and the narrator just loses his mind and is grateful when a thunderbolt destroys the house, killing everybody in it. Whereas, you know, that's in Arkham Horror, if you ran into a maniac or a cultist or something, you're just not worried about that.
No, it comes back to that point where Lovecraft tropes merge and blend with tabletop gaming tropes.
Yeah.
Where it's natural to murder everything that runs across your path that isn't immediately helpful.
Yes, the game pretty much requires that you do so. In fact, it doesn't let you not. You can try to sneak past them, but if you fail to sneak past them, you're going to have to fight them.
Yeah, or let it beat the crap out of you and then sneak away again. And
yeah.
Combat is an intrinsic part of an Arkham Horror board game.
The game does permit you to run away, but I've never seen anyone do that. Either sneak or fight.
Right. Because once you, it's that gamer mentality. Once you're in it and you've lost something, you can't stop.
No, you need to win now.
Yeah. It's interesting to see this blending and merging in that you have these gamer tropes where, oh, I have to kill everything. But you also have the Lovecraft tropes of this one thing will cause a character to not even try to do anything but flee or freeze up or whatever they may do. And I think it's created a new horror/action genre in a way that takes a little bit from all the things it's drawing on, and you can't really call it horror anymore, but it has monsters and spells and the occasional bout with insanity.
Yeah, there are definitely novels along those lines where there are these Lovecraftian horror type things, and there are people who, for whatever reason, are going to deal with them. Put that all in, you know, the deal with them in caps. They're clearly the protagonists, and there will be a reckoning of some sort. And there's several authors who write in that genre where the people do seek out Gugs and, you know, take care of them or do spells using their iPhones.
Right.
And things like that.
Yeah, Brian Lumley's Titus Crow novels is one I'm aware of.
Yeah, the Titus Crow I haven't heard very good things about, but he definitely fights those guys.
Oh, he fights the crap out of them.
And in Charles Stross's Laundry series.
Right.
That, I mean, I know you've read the first book. In the second book, it gets more clear with the main character. He's got a suite of apps on his iPhone that lets him do various magic things. And it's all, you know, reduced down to its mathematics, and sometimes there are these terrible monsters and you just need to deal with them, often by banishing them, but sometimes it involves, you know, the SAS coming in and or the special boat service or, you know, some kind of British special forces shooting the crap out of them.
The hard men.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, there's a few characters like that. And it's a great series. I mean, one of the characters gets Eric Zahn's violin, and she's licensed to use it, and that's very, very creepy. And sometimes they're just, you know, a bunch of soldiers shooting some sort of tentacled thing.
Right.
Call of Cthulhu put out their Delta Green expansion or books, and that's basically the same kind of thing.
Right, yeah. Because for a long time, Call of Cthulhu, the RPG, was traditional people in tweed and flapper dresses.
Yes, getting terrified, running away, casting spells, maybe shooting something.
Yeah, which is, I think, a lot where a lot of these Arkham Horror, the game tropes came from, was the gamification of the genre.
Yeah,
I'd agree. Subtypes in general in the role-playing game. And then that happened. And then it went even further with Delta Green.
Yep. And there's a number of other things nowadays, too. There's Cthulhu Tech with high technology. There's the Rome stuff. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things.
I think Rome would be interesting in that you have even less technology to fall back on.
You've got none, really. You got swords and...
inclined planes.
Yeah, maybe a water screw.
Oh, and cement. They had cement.
They did have cement. You could shove your Ancient One into a pit and just pour cement on him.
If only we had a device to pour the cement in that larger scale.
Damn it, why can't Archimedes invent that? Damn you, Archimedes.
He spends all that time on the sun mirror.
Well, you could point those at Cthulhu. Sure. Force him back into the ocean.
And then he would just regenerate his hit points. But we've gotten off the main point.
We have.
Which is that Arkham is a fun game. It's long. It is long. It can get even longer.
The nice thing about it, since it's cooperative, you don't need someone else to play. You can play by yourself.
Yeah. I have played a couple solo games, but I find I'm completely dishonest when I'm by myself.
Yeah, I played a couple, and it wasn't as much fun because there's not as much interaction, of course. And yes, the urge to cheat is stronger.
It's not even urge. It's just the realization that it doesn't matter.
Yes, no, in my mind. It doesn't matter. You can totally have fun by just not even rolling, just succeeding at everything.
Yeah.
You're still having a good time.
Depends.
It's not as good a time, perhaps, but...
yeah, I've found there comes a point where it's, why don't I just sit quietly on the couch and read the cards?
So much less work.
I don't have to unpack the board. I don't have to move all these tokens around.
It's easy. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, but I don't do that because, again, those cards are the key reason I play the game. I want to be surprised by them. I don't even want to see the card when my character is experiencing it. I like having someone else read the card to me, and it's like, now I roll my dice. I wouldn't even necessarily need to see the success charts, although I know that's part of knowing what you're shooting for.
Oh, yeah. You know, if there's going to be a certain number of successes.
Yeah.
When I first started playing the game, we didn't read the whole card to the other person. If it gets to the one of those cards that has a choice, you know, right. If you reach into the hole,
yep,
we made him decide before we told him what was going to happen.
Yeah,
then we found out that you can't do that. You got to read the rules say you have to read the whole card so they know the consequences.
Yep,
it was somehow a little more fun. Although I will say that I think almost everybody always chose yes.
Yeah,
if you don't know the consequences, it's probably something great.
Yeah, and
often it is not.
Often it is not, but. Arkham is one of those games where and nothing happens is a real downer. Even if it's the best thing in that you didn't lose any of your resources, you didn't lose any hit points, it's still, well, nothing happened to me this turn. Now I have to wait.
Now I have to wait till later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole point is to have stuff to happen and to be okay with the fact that it's probably going to be bad.
Because every time when it's good, it just seems so amazing.
Yeah, it really is one of those things where...
I found a Tommy gun. Awesome.
Everything is so horrible when something decent happens. It's like, this game is awesome. Or, my character has suddenly become awesome.
I can remember getting the Necronomicon in an encounter and realizing that due to the character I was playing, it was going to be really cheap and easy to use. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is great. You just crank spells out of that thing.
Mm-hmm. You find those little spots in the game where it gets really awesome. And it sort of... smooths over all the dead turns.
The small victories are magnified before the massive defeats.
And that's a whole Lovecraft theme in and of itself, is all humans ever get are small victories.
Yeah, when Professor Armitage kills the Dunwich Horror, everybody's great. This is wonderful. We got rid of that thing. But now he knows that there's much worse things out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that however horrible the Dunwich Horror would have been for the world, it wasn't as bad as its father or its other things that are out there sitting around.
The things that are still alive and can come back whenever they like.
Yeah.
Or whenever the time is right.
When the stars are right.
Mm-hmm. So, Arkham Horror is a fun game. You got to be prepared for some things when you get into it. It's usually...
it's spectacular.
Spectacular is a fine word for it.
It's also big. There's a lot of parts.
Yep.
There's a constant search to try to find a better way to organize them.
I think that's just part of the OCD mentality of most game players.
Yes. I mean, I've got the game reduced down that it'll fit into three boxes.
Mm, three boxes for eight expansions worth of stuff.
Right. So that's not bad. Mm. There's two of the large boxes that I don't need to use, plus I don't use any of the small boxes. But it still needs three large, fairly good-sized boxes, and they get kind of heavy when you put all the cards in.
Yeah, they do. it really needs to come with some sort of tote strap solution as well.
Yeah.
But it's a fun game. The best way to learn it is probably to find somebody who already knows it intimately.
Oh, God, yes. You can read the rule book and then just try playing it, but...
It can be done. That's the way I learned.
We did that the first time I played it, and we didn't realize that the mask monsters are only out with Nyarlathotep, so we're spending, like, 3 turns trying to figure out how to kill the god of the bloody tongue.
Mm-hmm. Not with the Pranga.
No, and he's not... Even with Nyarlathotep out, he's not easy, but, I mean, he's like, oh, my God. I think he's the toughest regular monster. He's got 4 hit points.
That's a lot. I think only the Dunwich Horror goes above that.
I think that's right. He's the god of the bloody tongue is pretty nasty.
Mm-hmm. So, but the point is, find someone who knows the game if you want to try it. Get them to do all the setup and prep work, because it's a fair amount of time setting up.
Half hour at least.
Yeah.
Well, it depends.
But get them to do the work. Get them to lead you through the game. If you like where it's going, you can learn the game.
And if you realize it's horrible, then you just walk away.
Yeah. And you can even leave the game halfway through if you really need to.
Oh, yeah, the game is set up for that. People can just die and leave. You know, people can leave. New people can come in. It's no problem.
Mm-hmm. It's nice like that. So, thanks for your thoughts on Arkham Horror, Dan.
Oh, you're welcome.
You've been listening to Carnage Cast, a production of NNEG LLC. All rights reserved. For more information, visit us at www.carnagecon.com.